Now I just do it like a game show. Welcome to Crime Binge.
No. I wasn't prepared for that. And I hate you.
Do you think that I would be a good game show host, though? With that introduction?
With that introduction.
Cool. Thank you.
Your general personality.
Damn.
No, you just like, oh. They have to like be fake happy all the time. And you just be like, you won a shitty prize. Like, yeah. Don't be happy about it.
I would just be like, you're laughing for the wrong reasons. I don't know where I just went with that. Okay. Do you want an actual introduction?
Sure.
Okay.
This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week, we're on episode 39.
That's a lot.
It is for us.
Yeah.
We've never done anything this long in our lives.
I know.
Sports, quit them.
I played basketball for 1 year in the fourth grade.
Honestly, I'm impressed. I played soccer. And my mom cut my hair and I looked like a little boy because I was like six. So, you know, I basically was a little boy. Kids are interchangeable at that age. But this week we are coming at you with more of a modern serial killer.
Yeah, he's like, I feel like he's not super well known, but yeah. He like is up there because of how like methodical he was and like stumped the FBI and they still don't know all of his victims and everything.
Yeah, and I feel like he's like slowly getting more popular the more that people like hear about him, because yes. He's not like a super well-known guy like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, he's very weird. But this week we're covering Israel Keyes, right?
That we are.
You just stared at me and I was like, I don't know what to say. But before we get into all of that, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
Okay, so this week I am binging a show on Hulu.
Nice.
And
are you using my Hulu account?
I am 100% okay, using cool. Your Hulu account. I would never pay for my own Hulu account.
Damn.
So the show is Everything's Gonna Be Okay. And
oh, I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's like this Australian guy in his 20s who goes home to visit his half-sisters
yeah.
in the United States that live with their dad, and the dad dies, and so he has to stay there.
Okay.
And basically become their guardian, and one of the girls, Genevieve, is like 14. She turns 15 in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the other girl is 17, and her name's Matilda, and she has autism.
Oh, okay.
And so like basically the show is them dealing with these, like, this guy trying to wrangle these two teenage girls and,
yeah.
like, them adolescent sexuality, autism.
Yeah.
Like, and he's gay as fuck. And, like, he's starting to date this boy. And this boy's so hot. But
Jesus Christ.
It's really funny. And it's also, like, heartfelt and touching
yeah.
in moments. But, like, I haven't seen a show that, like, showcases autism like this.
Right.
And it's really interesting, and it's really fucking good.
Yeah. I've always wanted to check out Atypical for that reason, and I mm-hmm. still haven't checked it out. But I've heard it's a wonderful show.
Yeah, so I haven't watched that one yet
that's
either.
That's, like, on my to-binge list.
What are you binging?
I am binging, because it's now February, and I just want to say that I read two books in January rather than just one.
Oh, shit.
And my second binge is the second book. My second binge. My binge is the second book I read. And it is called Doing It by Hannah Witten.
Mm-hmm.
And she is like a sex education YouTuber. And she's really, really fun. But she also has like a disability and all of this stuff, so now she's talking more about like sex and disability, which is really interesting.
Okay.
But the book is about sex and relationships and consent, like what the meaning of consent is and how to negotiate it, and it's just like a really cool book. I like it a lot. I did make the mistake of reading it at work because people were like, what are you reading? And I was like, it's just a book, why are you being so nosy? Like, I got super weird about it. But it's really fun. And, like, it is aimed more towards, like, 14-year-old girls and up who, like, need to learn about that stuff. But mm-hmm. there's never, like, it's never taught in schools.
Yeah.
So it's kind of written for a younger audience, but it was still fun, and it's still, like, reminders that everyone should, like, read sometimes, I think, if you're a woman. Like, healthy relationships, what they look like, things like that.
Yeah.
So I liked it a lot. It was fun. It's also one of those books where you can pick it up and read just one chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a linear type of book.
Okay.
So you don't have to read it all in one sitting. I'm just that way, so I had to read it in one sitting.
Yeah, I've watched a couple of her YouTube videos, and she's really funny. And, like, I've seen her just, like, answering, like, questions that kids ask on YouTube.
Yeah.
And she was, it's like, can you get pregnant from kissing a boy? And she's like, no, but just don't do it. You're, like, 10.
Yeah. She's just like, maybe you're too young for that.
Yeah.
But should we just get into this story?
Yeah, tell me a little bit about Israel Keyes.
All right. I will tell you something about Israel Keyes, Sarah. So, Israel Keyes was an American serial killer with seemingly no preferred type of victim, just killing at random for the sake of killing.
And like we said before, like, he was really methodical, like, and had the FBI stumped for a long time.
Yeah, and afterwards, the FBI officially linked 3 murders to him. He suggested that there were at least 8 murders, and the FBI to this day finds it likely that he committed up to around 11 murders. And his crimes likely spanned from 1996 to 2012 and crossed many state lines.
And that's, like, that's a long time.
It
that's
is.
16 years.
The 1996 is, like, unconfirmed, mm-hmm. but it's very likely because that's when his weird, like, travel pattern behaviors kind of started.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a really weird guy. He has a really weird timeline. So bear with us as we try and nail down the timeline because the FBI still doesn't know that much.
Yeah. So a little bit about Israel Keyes before he was a diabolical murderer. he was born in Richmond, Utah on January 7th of 1978. His parents were John Keyes and Heidi Hawkinson. And his parents were Mormon and homeschooled their children. And his mother was, like, very overbearing.
Yeah.
Israel was the second oldest out of 10 kids.
Too many kids.
They were Mormon. And the family eventually moved to Stevens County in Washington, which is north of Colville, settling basically in the woods when Israel was 5 years old.
Yeah, they were just kind of a weird family.
Definitely. So while living here, they attended the Ark, which was a Christian identity church that it's known for racist and anti-Semitic views.
I got into, like, a big hole while researching Israel mm-hmm. Keyes when I found this church because I had never heard of it. And I just put in a quick note because I feel like it's important to know about these things, that Christian identity is a religious ideology where adherents believe that whites of European descent can be traced back to the lost tribes of Israel. They also consider Jews to be the satanic offspring of Eve and the serpent, and they're also usually extremely anti-government. They usually influence white supremacist and extreme anti-government movements and often leads to acts of terrorism. And I found this information at ADL.org, and their mission is to stop the defamation of the Jewish people and to secure justice and fair treatment to all, which I feel like is
important.
Something we can all stand behind.
Right.
Keyes said that the family who went to, like, these few different churches like this, he described them as sort of being Amish and some of them being more militant sort of churches. Sorry, go on.
You're good. So the family had also lived sometimes without electricity, and some of the kids had to sleep in tents. The children and in Israel's family would earn money through under the table jobs like cutting firewood and working on neighbors' farms.
Yeah.
Israel said that he spent a lot of time in the woods and basically hunted anything with a heartbeat. He would also start random fires in the woods, which are classic serial killer vibes.
Yeah.
He was also obsessed with guns from an early age, and he would shoot at houses with BB guns, and then he would start breaking into his neighbors' houses to steal their guns.
Which just feels like a bad idea to me.
Definitely.
Like breaking in to steal someone's gun that they could attack you with. It's fine.
So he would stash the guns that he stole in his family's home, and one time his parents found them and basically just made him return the guns and apologize to the neighbors.
Can you imagine someone walking up to your door and being like, I stole your gun, I'm really sorry about it, like kicking their feet.
Like a 12-year-old?
Yeah. It would be just the most bizarre thing.
The family then moved to Maupin, Oregon, and after the family moved, they became friends with their neighbors who were the Kehoe?
That's how I heard it pronounced, yeah.
The Kehoe family. Keyes was childhood friends with Chevy and Cheyenne Kehoe, and they were known racists that were later convicted of murder and attempted murder. And Chevy was convicted of murdering a family of three and dumping them in a swamp in 1995.
So, like, solid friends to hang out with.
Yeah, he's been around good people his whole life.
Yeah. So, when Israel was 17, he became super annoying. He completely rejected religion and became an atheist. But he was one of those really annoying atheists who, like, always talks about how atheist they are and, like, how your religion is dumb. Like, and it's like, don't be that guy.
I personally am an atheist. Like, I don't believe in religion. Yeah. But, like, I don't talk about it. Like,
yeah, you're not, like, constantly shitting on people who are religious.
Yeah, like, if someone has a conversation with me about religion, I'll mention it. But, like, I'll usually just keep my mouth shut because I'm not going to start an argument or whatever. Like, I'm like, I believe what I believe and you believe what you believe.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just like, he was just one of those people who are like, dude, come on. We're trying to have fun right now. And obviously, since his parents grew up, like, raised him, rather, like, very religious and all these different weird religions, it caused lots of fights between him and his father. At one point, Israel also killed his sister's cat, and he, like, had just gotten mad at it. And in front of his friends, he killed it and just, like, took it out into the woods. And none of his friends wanted to hang out with him anymore because they were like, that was too far, dude.
Yeah, I, like, wouldn't want to hang out with someone who killed a cat.
Just super weird.
Also, like, literally the third fucking serial killer sign.
Yeah, like, all of the things are lining up.
Yeah.
In his late teenage years, he worked at a popular tubing place where people would inner tube down the Deschutes?
Deschutes, yeah.
Deschutes River in Oregon. One of our friends recently listened to our podcast and has been just shitting on me relentlessly for how we pronounced this place. And I don't even remember. Oh, like Milledgeville. And it was actually around this time that he decided that he could just rape or kill someone and get away with it, which is a weird thought to have while you're just, like, working around inner tubes.
Right.
To me. He was also very into Satanism at this time, and he wanted to perform a satanic killing involving a young woman, which is, again, not usually what Satanism is actually about, but it's fine. And he said that one day around 1997 that he helped a girl out of the river who was the last in her group, and she was between, like, 14 to 18 years old with sandy blonde hair. His plan was to then strangle. Oh, sorry. He drug her into a campground bathroom, tied her up with rope, and raped her. His plan was to then strangle her, and he had knives with him to perform a satanic ritual. And he would then throw her body in the toilet pit where he thought it wouldn't be discovered for a long time. But even though he kept telling her to shut up, she kept talking to him and begging him to let her go. So he did.
Yeah.
Which is,
he showed remorse for once.
Yeah. I don't even know if it was that or if it was just like, this is annoying. You know?
I'm still like 17.
Yeah. He did say that if she were to have fought him, that things would have probably gotten violent and he probably would have ended up killing her, but she was submissive and scared. And he also said that he was too timid to go through with it and that he wasn't violent enough. Yet, I guess. And he said, I made up my mind I was never going to let that happen again. And this is, I think this is like the crime that they're unsure of, right? Mm-hmm. That starts his crime spree, because they have never identified the girl to the public as of yet.
Yeah, and they don't know if she like ever reported the rape or anything.
Oh God, that's me. Okay. Keyes served in the U.S. Army from 1998 through 2001 at several places like Fort Lewis, Fort Hood, and in Egypt. At Fort Lewis, Keyes served on a mortar team in the 1st Battalion, 5th Infantry, and the 25th Infantry Division. When he was in Egypt, him and other soldiers would frequent sex workers, which is condom. Freudian wow, slip there, right? Which is common, is what I was trying to say. When he left on July 8th, 2001, he was at the rank of specialist. He was awarded with several decorations and awards such as Army Achievement Medal, Army Service Ribbon, Marksman Badge with Rifle Bar, Expert Infantry Badge, and Air Assault Badge. I don't really know what any of these mean, but it'll mean something to someone out there, which is why I included it. Former Army friends say that Keyes was a pretty quiet guy and just kept to himself, much like most of these men who are in the military. But on the weekends, he would drink heavily, specifically Wild Turkey bourbon, in case you wanted to know.
Yeah, which is like a pretty decent bourbon. So like he had okay taste.
Right. Yeah. The important things.
Right.
He was also incredibly into the insane clown posse and had several large posters of the group hanging up in his barracks.
Okay. So.
Oh, God. Anytime you say okay, I'm like, am I going to have to edit this story out?
When I was younger, I had an older sister.
Yeah.
Well, I still
have. You still have an older sister.
But she's 7 years older than me. So when I was like 9 and 10, she was like, you know, 17, 18, yeah, whatever, and I wanted to be like her, and she also had a babysit me, so I just hung out with all of her friends. Mm-hmm. And her friends would listen to ICP. Jesus. And so when I was younger, I was real into ICP. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm the way I am.
It could be. So basically what you're saying is that you and Keyes would be like BFFs.
Basically.
You're identifying with a serial killer, Sarah. I'm just kidding.
But yeah, that was just a little anecdote that I wanted to put in there because
it's enjoyable.
And like
I like to picture tiny blonde Sarah just like yelling along to ICP.
Oh, I still know all of the songs.
It's okay. And we believe you.
My family's from Michigan and I have friends up there that like have ICP tattoos and shit because they're from Detroit. And like, yeah,
it's
that's
a lot.
My life,
it's a lot. Personally, not my taste in music.
Not a lot of people's taste in music.
But it was just weird because he had a lot of posters hanging up and just like would go in his room and listen to it real loud
and drink his Wild Turkey.
Yeah. But Keyes began seeing a woman named Tammy towards the end of his time in the military. And when he got out, he moved in with her on the Macaw Reservation where she was from. At this time, she was pregnant with their child. And he spent the next 6 years living with her on the reservation and working in the Parks and Rec Department for the Tribal Authority, where he would again spend most of his time in the woods. Around 2007, he and Tammy broke up, and he started dating a new woman named Kimberly, which I think might not be her real name, but it's like the alias that they've given her in the court documents, that he met on Match.com. And Kimberly moved to Anchorage, Alaska, so Israel and his daughter went with her in March of 2007. In 2007, Keyes also started a construction company in Anchorage called Keyes Construction, where he worked as a handyman, contractor, and construction worker, and was obviously the owner. Later, after his arrest, Keyes said that this company was his base operation, but he would travel all over the country to commit crimes. And State Senator Hollis French, who lived down the road from Keyes, said he was well known in Anchorage as a really good handyman. Yeah. Like, he was just a pillar of the community.
Yeah, like, and he lived down the road from the state senator and also from, like, the circuit court judge.
Yeah.
And, like...
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah.
He was just, like, friends with all of these people.
So now we're going to talk a little bit about, like, his timeline with crime. And yeah. Back up a little bit.
And this is, like, what the FBI can estimate, basically.
Yeah. So throughout this entire timeline, Keyes is known to have robbed banks and hundreds of homes to pay for his travel. And so, starting in July of 2001 to October 2001, Keyes resided in Nia Bay, Washington, and he committed his first homicide, he says, where the identity and location of the victim are unknown.
He, like, very specifically kept things vague.
Yes, like, he said a quote along the lines of, like, this is for me and it's just stuff for me to know.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you the things that you need to know.
Which is super weird and mm-hmm. creepy.
So the next one, the date is unknown, but it happened somewhere in between 2001 and 2005. Keyes stated that he killed an unidentified couple while in Washington. And it's unknown if the couple were from the state or if they were tourists.
Right.
And he killed them with blows to the head. And supposedly he was just trying to subdue them, but... Like, and didn't intend on killing them, but he did.
Yeah.
And he ended up hinting to burying the couple near a valley in Washington.
And that's, like, pretty common for killers is, like, the first couple of times they're just, like, trying it out. And they mm-hmm. say they're not going to actually kill them. And then they end up doing it when they're in the moment.
And they get that rush.
Yeah.
So, in between 2001 and 2005, Keyes also spent a lot of time in Belize. And he this guy travels so much.
Yeah, and literally, like, the only reason he has money for all this travel is, like, robbing banks, basically, yeah. for large amounts of money.
In February of 2004, he rented a car in Salt Lake City, and he had it for 7 days. It is unknown if he actually committed any murders throughout this time, but, like, it fits his MO.
Yeah, like, his MO was to rent a car, put a lot of miles on it, driving around and, like, burying bodies. It was mm-hmm. very weird.
From April 20th through the 25th of 2005, Keyes traveled to British Columbia. And in 2005 and 2006, Keyes said he committed 2 murders that were separate from each other. The identity of these victims are, again, unknown. But he did use his boat to dispose of the bodies. And he said that one of the bodies he disposed of was in Crescent Lake in Washington, and he used anchors to submerge the body in over 100 feet deep water.
Yeah.
It is also unknown if he moved the victim's cars away from the place where the crimes took place, because he did that, like, really frequently.
Right.
In March 1st through the 9th, 2007, Keyes was in Canada, and April 24th through May 4th, 2007, he traveled to Mexico. In October of 2008 through November 5th, 2008, Keyes traveled all over the country in this span.
Yeah, so he was probably committing a murder for sure here.
He visited Arizona and North Dakota before flying to Seattle on October 31st. He rented a car in Seattle and then on November 2nd flew from Seattle to Boston. On November 5th, he flew back to Seattle and then home to Anchorage. And it's believed that he participated in criminal activity throughout this time. It is also believed that this is the time where he started stashing these caches all over the country.
Which is, I think, one of the weirdest things he does mm-hmm. as a criminal. And, like, this is what makes him sinister to me, because he's, like, a big old dork, but... Yeah. He also does this thing where he's burying shit. It's so creepy to me.
So these caches that he would bury were 5-gallon buckets and they contained guns, ammo, knives, rope, money, garbage bags, and Drano. And, like, he would basically just pick places to bury them all over the country, wherever he thought he wanted to commit a murder. And then remember, like, the coordinates of where he buried them and dig them back up years later when he went to do a murder.
It was super weird. Yeah. And I also heard that he would have to put, like, a lot of extra grease on the guns so they wouldn't, like, go bad, basically, by the time he wasn't there. So it's just, like, just so weird. Like, don't bury guns, you weirdo.
On December 11th through the 25th of 2008, he traveled to Mexico.
Again.
Yeah. And also, like, the reason why I put these in is because when I listened to the Murder Squad episode on Israel Keyes, like, they're looking for his, like, time travel timeline like this to see if there were any unsolved murders throughout this time.
Yeah, like, if someone would hear of an unsolved, like, murder that happened during that time and call in and be like, oh, shit, and they could solve something. That would be really cool.
Yeah. On April 9th of 2009, Keyes admitted to abducting a female, and her name was Deborah Feldman, on the East Coast and taking her over state lines, and he buried her in upstate New York after killing her. Deborah disappeared from her apartment in New Jersey on the 8th, the day before, and she was 48 at the time, and she was into drugs, and she was a sex worker, and she was, like, that was her life.
So people thought, like, if she was gone, it wouldn't be a big deal.
And actually, up until Key's confession in 2012, her son thought that maybe she disappeared as part of the witness protection program, because I think she was working with the police.
Oh, okay, like an informant or something.
Mm-hmm. And when Keyes was first interviewed, he was, like, shown piles of pictures of missing people, and he would sort through them being like, nope, nope, nope. And then he got to the picture of Deborah, and, like, he hesitated for a minute on it and then just said, I don't want to talk about her yet.
Yeah, because he has to be in control and weird about it.
So he obviously fucking did it.
Yeah.
Then on April 10th, 2009, the next day, Keyes robbed Community Bank in Tupper Lake, New York. After robbing the bank, he spent several hours in a nearby campground until he was certain that emergency vehicles would be gone. When he would commit these robberies, he would research the place beforehand and would make sure that there were, like, three or four routes out of town.
And he would always pick, like, the one farthest away from, like, where he was doing it and stuff.
He also smoked a cigar in the parking lot of the bank and then, like, went in.
Yeah.
Like a real tool.
Yeah, and, like, he does this throughout some of his other crimes where he's like, I'm gonna smoke a cigar. And it's like, do you think you're a mobster in a movie when you're about to commit these robberies? Like, who do you see in your head? Because, like, you don't look like a mobster. You look like a scrawny white boy.
And, like, a cigar takes a while to smoke.
Yeah, like, it's not like a cigarette. You're out there for a while with that cigar.
So while Israel was doing this robbery, he was clearly wearing a fake beard. But, like, the beard was made out of real hair.
So gross.
And later, when he was arrested, investigators asked him about this, and he said, hair is free.
It's, like, my favorite comment anyone's ever made, but it's like, where did you get the hair, Israel? You can't just say hair is free. What the fuck?
Do you realize how many people he's killed? He got it from one of each.
I'm just saying, like, don't say hair is free to the investigators trying to get more and more murders out of you, you fucking creep.
So, from this bad beard bank robbery, he walked away with $10,000.
Also, he does the fake but real hair shit more than once. Like, every robbery he does, he wears hair from another person.
And it's like, I get how methodical he was with the murders, but, like, how do you not get, like, arrested for robbing so many banks?
I don't know, truly. He was very good at it, apparently.
So, after this, Keyes checked into the Handy Suite Hotel in Vermont for 4 days. And then he would later use this hotel again for another murder. April of 2011, Keyes staked out a park near Point
Warzenoff?
Warzenoff? Yeah, sure. That sounds good.
It's probably not right.
That's okay. Before he got to this park, he made a silencer for his gun at home with parts from Home Depot. And he wanted to test out this silencer. So, like, instead of just, like, shooting a tree or something, he was like, I'm going to try it out on a person.
Makes sense. The story checks out.
In public.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the only way you can test if it's silenced.
No, it's not.
I know.
That's like if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, did it fall? And it's like, yes, it still, or no, it didn't make a noise.
So at this park, he intended on shooting a couple that were parked in their car. And he became distracted when a cop pulled up. And he was like, well, now I'm going to shoot the couple and the cop.
Right.
Smart idea.
Solid choice.
But his plans went south when a second cop showed up and he was like, that's too much.
Yeah.
Too much of a risk. So he discarded the whole fucking thing.
He does this a lot, which to me is even creepier because I'm like such a paranoid bitch. Yeah. I'm like, how many things have I been doing and someone's just watching me?
Yeah. He loved to just sit in the woods and like watch people and be like, you don't know, I know you.
You have to be such a certain type of person to just like sit in like a squat position for hours just watching people. Like you have to be very dedicated to that position.
Have some good quads.
Yeah, you have to do mad squats.
So after that one, in May of 2011, he staked out another park at the North Fork Trailhead in Eagle River, Alaska. And his intention was to abduct a kayaker from there.
So specific, yeah. But he said specifically a kayaker.
I mean, it would be really cool to kayak in Alaska, though.
Oh, yeah, it would be beautiful. Mm-hmm.
So he had stashed one of his caches nearby, containing a shovel and Drano to dispose of the body. But, like, he denies actually taking someone from this park.
Yeah.
And he said that, like, no one showed up, so he just went home.
Yeah.
So he killed two more people before the next couple, according to him, but he was really vague about their descriptions.
Yeah.
And he said that one was a woman with a wealthy grandmother who had pale skin and drove an old car. And the other one, he said that, like, he staged it to look like an accident and it had actually been ruled an accident.
Yeah. So who knows if he actually did it or not, but.
All right.
So now we're going to get into the murders that we 100% actually know that he committed.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. We're back today with our second sponsorship with Best Fiends.
Woo!
And it's Morgan and Sarah here to tell you a little bit more about them.
And honestly, I'm still shocked that they even want to work with us again.
It's because we're great.
It's true. We are great.
In all honesty, I've been binging this game. I start playing Best Fiends as soon as I wake up in the morning to help get my brain started for the day. And you can tell I'm obsessed because in less than 2 months, I've jumped from level 6 to 65 all the way up to level 200.
That's very impressive. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
On the other hand, I love playing this game after a long day at work or after researching for this podcast as a way to wind down after a stressful day. Right now, I'm actually stuck on level 590, which is so frustrating.
That is so rude.
But they also have, like, a lot of extra levels that you can play on the side. So when I get, like, stuck on that one, I just go and play the other levels as well.
I'll get there one day. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play.
Download Best Fiends free on the Apple Store or Google Play. And remember, guys, that's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Keyes flew from Anchorage to Chicago on June 2nd, 2011. He rented a car in Chicago and drove to Essex, Vermont, which is 902 miles and crosses 5 states. And this is where he stays in the Handy Suite Hotel again.
Yeah. And like, he was like, I'm going to fly to Chicago, rent a car, yeah. drive this far. So that way, no, like, he doesn't have a trail. Yeah. Basically.
It's super annoying. Mm-hmm. On June 7th, Keyes purchased a fishing license and went fishing. And he returned his kill kit that he had buried after Deborah Feldman to retrieve his gun. And another thing that they look at when he goes places is to see if he gets a fishing license, because that typically means he murdered someone, because he'll either do it before as like a way to get ready to murder, or after as a celebratory thing mm-hmm. to do after a murder.
And like,
and it's just like so gross. And then he puts the bodies in the lakes where he's fishing.
But it's also like, I can murder someone, but there's no way I'm going to fucking fish without a fishing license.
Well,
like,
he doesn't want to get caught yeah. fishing with a dead body and also not a license, Sarah.
Because it's much harder to hide from the wildlife police it than is. It is from the regular police.
For sure. He had his priorities straight. He looked around for a house for a while because he also wanted to burn down a church after he committed his murder, just like for the hell of being an atheist, apparently.
He had big fucking plans this trip.
He really did. He loved it. And he always chose his victims. He always chose his victims at the last second. And this is the weirdest thing to me. His plans were more about, like, the idea than the person was, because he just, like, would create this scenario in his head and just would want to fulfill it.
And I read something that said that, like, the only criteria that he had about his victims is that he wanted them to be, like, lighter people because they were easier to transport.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah, he had no rhyme or reason to his victims, which is, like, even scarier, because mm-hmm. usually people have a type. Very weird. Before he committed the murder that we're going to get into, he tried to kill someone else originally. He was looking for a man who was alone and had a nice car, as he wanted to rob a bank the next day. Unfortunately for Keyes, it was pouring rain that night, and he thought he finally found a guy who was in a yellow Volkswagen, so very cool. And but since it was raining, the guy just, like, ran inside his apartment, so Keyes didn't have a good opportunity to grab him. So he returned back to his hotel room to come up with a new plan, which would be abducting a couple.
Even harder.
Yeah. Bill and Lorraine Currier were a couple in their 50s and worked as an animal hospital technician and a medical practice worker.
I also wasn't able to find which one was which thing.
Yeah, that's okay. On June 8th, 2011, Keyes set up a blitz attack on the couple during the night. He said that he chose the victims solely on the layout of their home. He said that the home showed that they didn't have a dog or kids and had an attached garage that would easily be broken into.
Because, like, since he had his daughter, he had a strict no violence against children rule.
Yeah, and he also said that dogs complicated things, so he just avoided houses with dogs because he didn't want to have to deal with that, too.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, and I just found it interesting.
Yeah.
Where serial killers draw the line is so interesting to me.
And I know he also had two dogs of his own, like, he had two little pugs.
Yeah.
So, like, that might have also been a factor.
It could have been. Because, like,
I wouldn't kill a dog.
Yeah, that would be terrible. But Keyes carried a gun with an attached silencer, who knows if it was his homemade one or not,
mm-hmm.
and wore a headlamp to be able to see around the dark house. So creepy.
Mm-hmm.
He first cut the phone line, seeing if it would trigger an alarm system, and when he determined that it had not, Keyes staked out the garage. He then removed a fan from a window in the garage and snuck in through that window. He grabbed a crowbar that was hanging on the wall of the garage to break the window of the door that led into his house, into the house, and he made his way to the courier. Is it couriers or yeah. couriers? Okay. I thought it was the same thing. I literally just said it the same. And he made his way to the courier's bedroom. He said that it took him about 5 to 6 seconds to get from their garage to their bedroom. Yeah. So fast. He bound the couple with zip ties and let them put on their slippers in order to walk across the broken glass from the garage and led them to their car.
Which is, like, again, such a weird thing. I'm going to kill you, but I'll let you put on your slippers.
He liked to make people think, like, he really wasn't going to kill them. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why he did it, to, like, gain favor with them. I'm not sure. And he told them that he wasn't going to hurt them. He was simply holding them for a ransom, and it was nothing more than that. And they were like, dude, you have the wrong people. We have no money. We're not involved in the drug, like, ring. Yeah. Like, please don't do this. You're not going to get money. And supposedly, they literally had, like, $100 in their account.
Wow. Yeah. Me.
Same. So he drove them out to an abandoned farmhouse in Essex that he had also already staked out, and he tied Bill to a stool in the farmhouse's basement. While he did this, he left Lorraine in the car, and when he came back for her, he realized that she had escaped, and he managed to tackle her and drag her back into the house. When he took her inside, he duct taped her to a mattress as a way to restrain her.
Which just sounds terrible.
Yeah, that's just like, get rope or something.
Right?
And as he was tying a rope around her neck because he preferred to strangle people, he heard noises from downstairs. At this point, Bill had also gotten free and was like blindly looking around downstairs for a weapon because it was pitch black.
So he's just like bad at tying people up.
Yeah, and like, this is why I'm like, how did he never get caught?
And I'm like, why choose a couple if you're gonna do it sloppily?
Yeah,
sloppily.
So Keys went down to the basement and began bludgeoning Bill. When Bill shouted out, "Where's my wife?" Keys shot and killed him. He says that this is the only time he shot someone because Bill just wouldn't do what he wanted him to do. And he was shot like at around 10 times, and Bill didn't fall until the very last shot.
That's crazy.
Yeah, like he was still trying to fight that whole time. Keys then went back upstairs where Lorraine was and sexually assaulted her. He took her downstairs to where her husband's body was, and then he sat her on a bench and like retied her there. He began to strangle her from behind while wearing leather gloves, and that was how he killed her. Keys described Lorraine as feisty as she tried to fight back. So both of them and the couple like just wanted their lives and were fighting really hard. Chittenden County's state attorney T.J. Donovan said, "It is clear from the facts of the case that though confronted with death, Bill and Lorraine showed extraordinary bravery and an extreme dedication and love for one another. They fought to the end." That's really nice.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. He then poured Drano on the bodies before stuffing them into garbage bags that he covered up with debris in the basement of the home.
This man also loves Drano.
He really does. And it's like, I guess to make them decomp faster or something, but it's just really weird. He also stopped in the middle of the crime to smoke a cigar outside in the rain because, again, he thinks he's in a movie.
And, like, I heard that he kind of, like, complained that it got wet from the rain. And it's like, there's bigger problems going on right now, like, dude.
You're the worst person right now. The house that the couriers were buried in was demolished, and the FBI spent months searching the landfill that the debris would have been taken to, but they were never able to recover the bodies. And I guess the demolishing crew, when they were doing it, they smelt something really bad coming from the basement and were like, it's probably just a cat.
Yeah.
And then just like demolished it and it got swept away in the rubble.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He left their car in a random parking lot and drove his rental car to Maine and throughout the East Coast. He went to Maine to just visit his brother, by the way, because he just does chill things after a murder.
Yeah.
He discarded the weapons used in a Blake Falls reservoir in New York, which were later recovered by an FBI dive team, as well as another catch that was buried nearby. He returned to Vermont, where he noticed crime scene tape surrounding the courier's house and continued following the case throughout the Vermont press. He then drove back to Chicago, where he flew to San Francisco on June 15th, stayed for one night, and then flew back home to Anchorage. Lieutenant George Murty, who interviewed Keyes about the courier's murder, said that Keyes had a very calm demeanor and showed no emotion. And after this crime, Keyes had only been committing murders in what is considered the lower 48 of the U.S. And he had been really careful up to this point, as he was constantly crossing state lines, like we talked about earlier, to avoid people making connections. But this changed with his last murder.
And his last murder was the one that he was caught for. And let's talk about Samantha Koenig.
Yeah.
So on February 1st, 2012, so less than half a year after the couriers, Keyes decided that he wanted to kill someone this night because he had tickets to take a cruise to Mexico from Louisiana the next day.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I got time.
That's how he, like, celebrates things. It's mm-hmm. very uncomfortable.
So he also assumed that if he was gone on his cruise, it would make it harder for the police to track him.
Yes.
And as we know by now, locations were more important to Keyes than the actual person he was killing. So he settled on a small coffee hut named Common Grounds Espresso in Anchorage.
Which is a cute name for a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm. And he chose the spot because it was open later than the other shops in the area. And this, like, little coffee place was basically like a little trailer hut thing in the middle of a parking lot.
Yeah.
He had actually watched this shop for a few days prior in order to see when the perfect time to strike was. And he also had a police scanner so he could check the police activity in the area. At home, he already planned out where the murder would occur once he kidnapped someone and brought them back. He had a shed in his backyard, and inside he had placed two heaters to warm the place up and had a tarp to collect any blood.
Because it's February in freaking Alaska. It's cold.
Yeah, I read somewhere that they said when they captured him, they said it was like negative 18 or something.
That's
like that.
That's wild, yeah.
So he then left his house and parked his white Chevy pickup truck in the Home Depot parking lot across from the coffee shop. Around 8 p.m., he heard on the police scanner that a big event happened across town. So, like, all of the police in the area were going towards that.
Yeah.
He took this opportunity to get out of the car and approach 18-year-old Samantha Koenig. Supposedly at this point, he had no idea what he was actually going to do tonight, as he knew he was going to rob it, but, like, he didn't know how many people were working inside. And
yeah. He didn't
like
know
that.
If he was going to actually kidnap someone and take them home type thing.
Mm-hmm. So he did notice that whoever was inside the shop didn't have a car with them because there were no cars parked nearby. So, like, they wouldn't have an easy way to escape or anything
right.
like that. Unfortunately, only Samantha was working. And at this point, she had only worked at this coffee place for a month.
Which is so sad to me. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I always hate hearing stories where, like, young women are working alone. It just feels like a bad idea to me.
Yeah.
To have any young person work alone, really.
So, Keyes went up to the coffee shop and ordered a coffee. So, Samantha turned around to make it, and he ordered an Americana.
He's very specific about the Americana. Mm-hmm. He also only drinks Americanas after he's arrested.
I hate him.
Yeah, he's the worst.
So when she turned back around to give him his coffee, Keyes was pointing his gun at her. He told her that this was a robbery, and he instructed her to turn off the lights, and then he climbed in the window with her, telling her to get on her knees.
Can you fucking imagine?
Right?
I'm sorry. This, like, creeps me out so much.
I also read that, like, it didn't have any, like the window didn't have any screen or plexiglass or mm-hmm. anything that she could shut to protect herself.
Yeah.
Like, it was just fucking open.
Yeah. It was like a little kiosk window.
Yeah. And so he told her to get on her knees. And while he was trying to tie her hands up, She said that her father would be there any minute to pick her up. But he didn't care.
Yeah.
So he pushed her out the door and he walked her to his car. He had also stuffed her mouth full of napkins from the shop, which is my worst nightmare.
Yeah, Sarah doesn't like things like that in her mouth.
No, I don't. I don't like things in general. While walking to the car, Samantha had actually managed to get away for a few seconds when Keys bent over to pick something up off the ground that he saw, but he quickly caught up to her and told her that if she did it again, he would kill her. And once in the car, he told her that he was simply holding her for ransom, so she needed to cooperate. And initially, ransom was part of the original plan, but he had always intended to kill her.
Yeah, there was never not an option.
Mm-hmm. And he used her phone to text her boyfriend and her boss. And, like, he texted her boyfriend saying something that along the lines of, I had a really bad day at work, so I'm going to just, like, lay low for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I also didn't have time to put in, but I read that while they were driving to his house, they pulled up to a red light and there was a cop car.
Oh, wow.
Next to them. And Keys was like, I saw her literally, like, going through the options in her mind of, like, do I try and escape? Do I call
That's
out?
That's so fucked up.
Mm-hmm. And then he was like, we sat there for, like, 10 seconds, and then we both just drove away and nothing happened.
That's the worst. That's, right. Like, your worst nightmare.
So he drove her to his house that he shared with his girlfriend and his daughter, and it was around 11 p.m. at this point. His girlfriend was awake and inside just, like, hanging out in the living room, and, like, she could have looked out the window and seen what was going on, but there were also people outside, like, walking their dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
So Keys decided to wait until about 2 a.m. to take Samantha from his car to the shed. In the shed, he moved her hands to be tied to the front of her so she could smoke if she wanted to. So he then left her alone again, telling her that he had some stuff to do to get the ransom in order, and he turned off the lights in the shed, and he turned up heavy metal music so no one could hear her if she tried to, like, call out for help.
Okay, but if my boyfriend was in his shed and all of the lights were turned off and there was just heavy metal music blasting from the shed, I would be like, should I call the police first?
Like,
or
what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, like, I would be very uncomfortable and would try and figure out what was going on.
Or, like, you know, in movies or whatever where people are like, oh, that's my husband's study or man cave, but yeah. I'm not allowed in there. It's like, you shouldn't not be allowed in any place in your home because there's definitely something going on.
Yeah, if you live in a house and you're not allowed in any of the rooms, that's weird.
Yeah.
You should be allowed in all of the rooms.
So before he left, he made Samantha give him her address and where her debit card would be. So she told him that her wallet would be in the center console of the truck that she shared with her boyfriend, Dwayne. And so Keys drives to Samantha's house. And when he gets there, he finds the truck and starts rummaging around to find her debit card and her wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And Samantha's boyfriend comes out. He sees Israel and, like, confronts him and is like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
And so her boyfriend goes back inside to either get help or, like, a weapon. And, like, by the time he comes back out, Keys had managed to find the card and get back in his truck and speed off. So, like, this guy saw Israel.
Yeah.
On his way home, he tested out the ATM card to make sure that the PIN number Samantha gave him was correct. And when he finally got back home, his girlfriend had gone to bed. Keys poured himself a glass of wine and went back to the shed where Samantha was. He tied her up with a cord around her neck, stabbed her in the back, and then raped her while he strangled her to death.
Yeah, he just loves to degrade people.
Mm-hmm. After he did this, he finished his glass of wine, went inside and got ready for bed so he could go on his Mexican cruise the next day.
It's crazy to me how, like, they can live their lives so normally after murdering someone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time I hear a serial killer who just, like, goes around and does that kind of stuff, it's just like, you really have zero empathy, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, and, like, I read that his like cruise and trip and everything was like 2 weeks long.
It was 2 weeks long, yeah.
So before he left for his cruise, he went back into the shed, wrapped her deceased body in a tarp, and just like put it in one of the cabinets of the shed. And he knew that because it was so cold in Alaska, he wouldn't have to worry about decomp too much while he was gone.
Yeah.
He double locked the doors and went on his merry way on his cruise.
Also, the amount of balls that you have to murder someone and then leave for 2 weeks.
Right?
That's incredible. I would be terrified the whole time that someone found out what I did.
I would stay in Mexico. I wouldn't go home.
I would never go home. I would also never murder someone, though. So
fair enough.
Fair point. So, obviously, the police immediately began their search for Samantha, like, the same night she went missing because she just suddenly disappeared.
Yeah, and, like, her dad came to pick her up and she wasn't there.
Yeah. The first thing the police did was search the surveillance cameras, but because Keyes had her turn off the light, they were unable to identify him past just being, like, a taller white man. Mm-hmm. And something that the investigation did that, like, really made people upset is at first they didn't release the surveillance video of her going missing because they didn't want it to be out. And it was, like, a move that a lot of people disagreed with.
Yeah, because I know that, like, the police have to do their job and keep something secret. But, yeah. Like, the public is honestly going to help you solve cases.
Right. Like that's how Carly Brusch's case was solved.
Exactly. Yeah. And if her boyfriend saw the footage, he could have been like, that's the guy that broke into my truck or, you know, yeah, something like that.
He could maybe connect the two. Yeah. It's crazy. But the best suspect that the town could come up with was a local rapper named Christopher Bird, who went by the name White Tyson,
which is honestly great because, you know,
it's
like
such a bad name,
like Tyson chicken nuggets.
Oh my god, get out of here. Jesus Christ.
I'm
so Christopher and Samantha had butted heads earlier this year, so everyone assumed that it was him because of this reason. His mom gave him an alibi though and said that he was home that night because he had been grounded. An 18-year-old boy had been grounded.
I mean,
I don't know. I just think it's funny because he's like a rapper.
Yeah.
And he's grounded. He was cleared as a suspect by the police pretty quickly, though. But the whole town still assumed it was him. We're like, nah, the police are wrong.
Honestly, he should probably just be in jail anyways.
Just because of that name. In the meantime, Keyes returned from his cruise on February 17th, but before he went home, he made sure to rob a couple of banks on the way.
Well, yeah.
The first bank was in Aledo, Texas, and he lit a house and barn on fire outside of city limits so that when he robbed the bank, all of the forces would be away, just like when he kidnapped Samantha.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, is kind of smart.
It is, but it's like, yeah, anyone could fucking think of that. That doesn't make you a serial mastermind. He didn't end up actually robbing the bank, though, and simply watched all of the emergency vehicles coming up to the fire, kind of like Thomas Sweat used to do. I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, he just got excited by watching the people go to the fire. And then he went to Azle, Texas. And he actually followed through with this bank robbery here. He dressed up in a ridiculous outfit and robbed the National Bank of Texas. And I think he was wearing, like, a hard hat that he had stuffed hair into to give him, like, a weird hairdo. And he just dressed like an insane person when he went to do robberies.
I don't know why. I just imagined him, like, dressing as, like, a rodeo clown.
Jesus Christ. I feel like that would be too obvious.
I know.
Yeah.
But that was just, like, in my head.
After this, he got home, and the first thing he did was go into his shed to confirm that Samantha's body was still there. And he actually had his daughter that weekend, so he confirmed she was still there and then, like, went inside and played with his daughter. And then,
because at this time, his daughter's, like, 12.
Yeah. But he was just, like, hanging out with her and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the Monday after he, like, arrived home, it was his time, like, his daughter's time to go back. So that is when he decided to take care of her body. Her body, though, had completely frozen in the Alaskan cold while he was gone, and he had to completely disassemble the cabinet that he had put her in order to take her body out even. He literally let her body thaw out and then committed necrophilia on the corpse. So that was his first necrophilia charge, yeah, and his only one.
Not great.
No. After this, he went on to do a bunch of weird errands where he went and got a Polaroid camera, makeup, and local newspapers with recent dates on them. He put makeup on Samantha and took photos of her with these newspapers to make it look like she was still alive for ransom money. And he did like a lot of graphic stuff to her body. Like apparently it took him hours to apply the makeup, and he did tape pulling on her face and stuff to make it look more expressionful.
Yeah, and like some sources said that he like sewed her eyes open.
And some said that they sewed them closed.
Yeah.
So it's just gross and yeah. But you can find some of these photos online, but a lot of them are fake. So I would just suggest like making sure you're not like looking at fake images and stuff like that. Like try and find the real ones if you are interested. Just like if a celebrity's nudes get leaked, guys, you don't have to look at them. They still deserve privacy. Not the time to make a point like that. So he then typed up a ransom note on a typewriter that he got from Goodwill. And at first I was like, because I kind of forgot how the case ended. And I was like, oh, shit, they're going to find him based on like the typewriter when it drops a letter and like all of that stuff. They don't. It's just he wrote it on a typewriter. And this note and photo were taken to a local dog park. And he put the photos of her under a missing dog photo in this park. He then proceeded to text Samantha's boyfriend from her phone, telling him where he could find the ransom note. When the boyfriend got this text, he was actually hanging out with Samantha's dad. So they rushed over, found the note, and immediately called the police without touching anything so fingerprints wouldn't be on it, which is good.
Yeah.
Keyes went home and immediately started dismembering her body. He took two trips to the lake to get rid of her, and he said that he went ice fishing and went as far as to build a little ice fishing hut to make it look more realistic. And when he went out there, there was someone else out on the water,
oh, wow,
ice fishing as well. And he attached heavy fishing weights to the bags and dropped them in the ice fishing hole, and then went on to actually fish out of the same hole he just dumped her body in, because he is a true trash human.
Yeah, like, what if you just pulled up her leg instead?
Well, he put weights on it. Yeah, I know. It was really deep down there.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Like, I forget that, like, ice fishing is really, really deep as opposed to just, like, regular fishing, yeah, here in lakes and shit.
Yeah, I'm assuming it was very deep where he put it.
So, on the ransom note, he had demanded $30,000, and so he checked Samantha's account, and only $5,000 had been put in.
These fucking police not giving in to my ransom demands.
Right? So he had forgotten that you can, like, only take, like, $500 out of an ATM at a time.
Yeah.
And so he hit up two that day and took out $1,000.
And he would wear like masks over his face and stuff when he used her card.
And the police like figured he was going to do this. So they were staking out ATMs in the area, but not the right ones that he used.
Yeah, because they covered like 50 different ATMs across Anchorage, but it's still a huge place. Yeah. So you can't do that much.
So he then realized that maybe I shouldn't be removing money from the same place that I live.
Yeah.
And he went down to the lower 48 again. He went to Las Vegas to get a rental car and then drove around the U.S. He stopped in Arizona and he withdrew $400 here in the town of Wilcox. He went to a second one in New Mexico, but was only able to withdraw about $80. And this is where I fucked up for the first time.
Yes. Finally.
Right. The FBI saw what car belonged to the man withdrawing money. And Keyes figured out that someone probably saw his car. So he went to another car rental place to, like, exchange it out. But they gave him the same exact car, which was a white Ford Focus.
Which is just the best. Because he can't be like, can you give me a different car?
No, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I mean, Corey's done that so many times. He's like, I don't want a car. Give me a truck.
Jesus Christ. You have to pay more for a truck.
Yeah, I know.
So you got to pay more for it.
Well, he had all the money he wanted. So after he got this new car, Keyes drives to Texas to go to his sister's wedding. Just, you know, casually.
Yeah.
But his sister had been in, like, this weird little cult. And the leader of the cult was the pastor, like, officiating the wedding.
Yes.
This pastor began discussing the evils of atheism. And, like, Keyes got really mad because we know how annoying he was about atheists.
Yeah.
Atheism. And he thought that they were referring specifically to him.
Which they probably were. Because, like, all of his extended family were, like, crazy in religions like this. But he just immediately got paranoid.
Yeah. So, during the wedding, he stands up and screams, "Your gospel has no grounding in truth."
All right, Keyes. Like, damn.
So, a bolo had been put out in Texas for a white Ford Focus. So, all the police in the area were high alert for this vehicle. He left his car just, like, chilling in the parking lot of the hotel he was staying in. And a cop saw it. They ran the plates and found out that this car was being rented by a man from Anchorage, Alaska. On March 3rd of 2012, the cops sat and watched him, wanting to do everything correctly.
Yeah, they wanted to really catch this guy.
Mm-hmm. So when he left his hotel and began driving around, the second he went over the speed limit, the cops pulled him over.
Which, like, me as a cop being petty.
So they take him out of the car and they search the car. They found a gun, money from a bank robbery, and the debit card and cell phone of Samantha Cohen.
Yeah.
He was immediately taken back to Alaska, where he confessed to everything pretty quickly. Keyes told him that he wanted to be killed as quickly as possible so his daughter wouldn't have to see him being painted as a serial killer.
And it's like, I'm sorry. It doesn't work like that because you are a serial killer.
And also, like, yeah, don't kill people. Your daughter won't know you didn't kill people.
Yeah.
But the only issue with this plan was that Alaska doesn't have the death penalty.
So, which you would think you would check beforehand.
So in order for, like, that to be on the table, it would have to be a federal, like, national case.
Yes.
And so he decided to tell them of the couple that he killed, the Couriers. And by the time he told them this, though, the farmhouse had been torn down and the bodies were lost. But the only reason they were able to confirm that he actually did this murder is because he had, like, a bunch of info on his home computer about it where he was following up about the case.
Yeah.
After his arrest, the police searched his home where he lived with his girlfriend, who was a nurse practitioner, his school-aged daughter, and two little pugs. And inside of his home, they didn't find anything out of the ordinary.
I do find it interesting because, like, I don't really think he collected trophies like most killers do.
No, I feel like his, like, little catches were his trophies.
Yeah, like, things. Those were his way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. And in an interview with police, he told them that his end game was to build a dungeon within his home.
Cool.
Which, like, I feel like that's a lot of serial killers' end game, and it never happens.
Yeah.
Besides, like, Leonard Lake and Charles
Manson. Yeah, or, like, the toy box killer.
Mm-hmm. When police asked him why he committed the murders, his only response was, why not? Because, like, he did it for himself, and he got thrills from the adrenaline, and, like, that's literally the only reason why he did it.
Yeah, he is the absolute worst.
Mm-hmm.
So, Keyes thought that he could have a trial and get killed within a year of his arrest. And, buddy, That's just not how it works. He was being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex when he committed suicide on December 2nd, 2012. He had cut his wrist and also strangled himself with a bedsheet tied around his neck. He had also placed cups and empty milk cartons under him to collect as much blood as possible so no one would notice right away and potentially save him. At the time he committed suicide, he was on a 23-hour-a-day guard watch and had been complaining that the guards were watching him like a hawk and that he had no long-term interest in survival in prison. They found a suicide note with his body that had a poem about murder. And this is the poem.
And it's a lot.
Mind you, it's a long one, but it's just a lot. So, without further ado, "Where will you go, you clever little worm, if you bleed your host dry? Back in your ride, the night is still young. Streetlights push back the black eye neat rose. Off to the right, a graveyard appears, lines of stone, bodies, molder below. Turn away quick, bob your head to the seat, as straight through that stop sign, you roll loaded truck with lights off, slams into you broadside." This is really bad. "Your flesh smashed as metal explodes. You may have been free, you loved living your lie. Fate had its own scheme, crushed like a bug, you still die. Soon now, you'll join those ranks of dead, or your ashes the wind will soon blow. Families and friends will shed a few tears, pretend it's off to heaven you go. But the reality is, you were just bones and meat, and with your brain died also your soul. Send the dying to wait for their death in the comfort of retirement homes. Quietly, quickly, say, it's for the best. It's best for you, so their fate you'll not know. Turn a blind eye back to the screen, soak in your reality shows. Stand in front of your mirror and you preen in a plastic castle you call home. Land of the free, land of the lie, land of scheme, Americanize."
Sorry, I hate just so bad.
"Consume what you don't need, stars you idolize. Pursue what you admit is a dream, then it's American die. Get in your big cars so you can get to work fast, on roads made of dinosaur bones. Punch in on the clock and sit on your ass, playing stupid games on your phone. Paper on your wall says you got smarts. The tests that you took told you so, but you would still crawl like, sorry, but you would still crawl like the vermin you are once your precious power grid's blown. Land of the free, land of the lie, land of the scheme, Americanized." Did he say it again?
He did.
"Now that I have held you tight, I will tell you a story. Speak soft in your ear so you know that it's true. You're my love at first sight, and though you're scared to be near me, my words penetrate your thoughts now in an intimate prelude. I looked in your eyes. They were so dark, warm, and trusting, as though you had not a worry or care. The more guileless the game, the better potential to fill up those pools with your fear. Your face framed in dark curls like a portrait. The sun shone through headlights of red. What color, I wonder, and how straight will it turn, plastered back with the sweat of your blood? Your wet lips were a promise of a secret unspoken. Nervous laugh as it bursts like a pulse of blood from your throat. There will be no more laughter here. I feel your body tense up. My hand now on your shoulder, your eyes. Forget the lady called luck. She does not abide near me, for her powers don't extend to those who are dead. Would that I could keep you, let you be the master of your own fate, knowing full well what's at stake. My pretty captive butterfly, colorful wings, my hand smears. I somehow repaint them with punishment and tears. Violent metamorphosis, emerge my dark moth princess. I would come often and worship on the altar of your flesh. You shudder with revulsion and try to shrink away from me. I'll have you tied down and begging to become my Stockholm sweetie. Okay, talk is over. Words are placid and weak. Back it with action or it all comes off cheap." I'm like staring
so
at
close.
You while
I
I'm
know.
Reading it. "Watch close while I work now. Feel the electric shock of my touch. Open your trembling flower or your petals I'll crush." jazz house music. I think I'm going to underlay some jazz music while I read that.
Do it.
So, after he died, the priest who spoke at his funeral was the one who he heckled at his sister's wedding, and he just talked about how terrible Keyes was the entire time and said that he was burning in hell.
Which is, like, the happiest ending ever. I love that.
That was Israel Keyes, guys.
Yeah. And like we said, there's still so much unknown because we only really know of, like, 3 confirmed, 4 real known with Deborah Feldman murders. And he had, like, 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And this guy's fucked up. Yeah. He's fucking weird.
Super weird. He's a big old nerd. And, you know, not a fan.
Right?
10 out of 10 would not recommend Israel Keyes. But do you have a Florida man, my dear?
I have a Florida family.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So, Florida family, but dials 911 while cooking meth.
Jesus Christ. There are so many things to unpack there.
An alleged mother-son meth-making team managed to alert law enforcement to their activities when they accidentally dialed 911 while preparing for a cook at their Florida home. A Volusia County emergency dispatcher who fielded the unintentional cell phone call, a possible butt dial, listened as 2 voices discussed drugs. Eventually, she heard a bubbling sound as if something was cooking. The dispatcher kept the call connected for a half an hour while deputies tracked the phone to a home in Deltona where they discovered a shed full of meth-making materials with smoke billowing out of it. The search of the shed turned up all of the markings of an active meth lab, including coffee filters, butane torches, batteries, all that shit that you need.
Yeah.
And numerous bottles containing a white substance. Jason Nope, 32, and his mother, Donna Nope, 55, as well as 41-year-old Thomas Stallings, were evacuated from the meth shed and arrested on charges of manufacturing and possession with intent to distribute.
A true American story.
Right?
The, like, American dream.
These fucking cell phones make you butt dial 911.
So, like, they were trying to be very Breaking Bad, basically.
Oh, definitely.
That's impressive. I love that for them. We hope that you guys liked this week's episode. Let us know if we felt more conversational and fun. This time we held our mics rather than using a stand. And Sarah and I felt like we were on a talk show. It was great.
Yeah, we felt like the whole demeanor of this podcast changed.
Yeah, we also were not recording after work. So that could be it, that we're just happy.
Yeah, that we didn't die at work today.
Yeah, so, you know, let us know if you prefer this type of episode where we're more conversational. And please reach out to us on social media. Make sure you leave a 5-star review. And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.